ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी. Okay, chapter 5, verse 16. ज्ञानेन तुतरज्ञानम् येषां नाशितमात्मनः तेषामादित्यवत् ज्ञानम् प्रकाशयति तत्परम्. ज्ञानेन तु तत् अज्ञानं येषां नाशितम् आत्मनः तेषाम् आदित्यवत् ज्ञानं प्रकाशयति तत्परम्. Remember the previous verse, it says, Vibhu, the Atma, the one who is self-evident, self-effulgent, all-pervasive, Vibhu, that Atma, na-adate, doesn't receive from anyone's punya or anyone's papa. The Atma is ever pure, in other words, never affected by punya or papa. So, that knowledge is ajnanena avritam jnanam. That knowledge is covered by ajnanam, because of which people are deluded. Right? Jantavaha muhyanti. People are confused because that knowledge itself is covered, right, by ignorance. And so because that knowledge is covered by ignorance, knowledge of the Atma, knowledge of the Self is covered by ignorance, then a person always feels themselves as a jiva, as an individual, being affected by punya and papa. So sometimes you are a sinner, sometimes you're a saint, and sometimes you're someone in between. Right? So the Atma, for the Ajnani, the Atma is somebody that's always changing, always subject to change and modification, either becoming good or becoming better, becoming good, better, best, or becoming, you know, worse. They're always being affected because the Atma per se is unknown. The Atma that you are, the Atma as you are in truth, is unknown. It's always superimposed, this mutual superimposition that we call anyonya adhyasa. This mutual superimposition is a given. It's a beginningless ignorance. And so now he goes on to say, jnanena tu tad ajnanam yesham. However, for whom the ajnanam, the ignorance, tad ajnanam of that self which is Brahman. That's the tad, is the Atma which is Brahman. So, for whom that ajnanam, nashitam, the ajnanam nashitam is destroyed by jnanam, right? Jnanena, by knowledge. The one for whom the ajnanam is destroyed by knowledge. Nashitam means is destroyed. The ajnanam of that Brahman for the Atma, right? The Atmanaha, the nature of the self is Brahman. So that is the ignorance. So the one for who this self, the recognition of this self is Brahman. That is the knowledge. So by that knowledge of myself, removing that ajnanam, the ajnanam of myself as Brahman. So for those who, for whom this self, for whom this ignorance has been removed, Tesham, for them, Adityavat, like the sun, Jnanam, Prakashyati, Jnanam, knowledge, Prakashyati, illumines, makes shine, Tatparam. Tatparam is the Paramartika Satyam, the Atma, which is the Atma, which is Brahman, which is the Absolute Reality. So, here there's some interesting things. I don't know if you've had a chance to read Swamiji's Bhashya on this, but there's some important things that he's bringing up. There's a huge debate that has gone on over the last 40 or 50 years about the nature of ajnanam, the nature of ignorance. Is ignorance something that is positive, or is it simply the absence of knowledge? Right? This is a big discussion in the Advaita world, and some people who came up saying that ignorance is really just the absence of knowledge. So ignorance itself has no being, it has no existence, right? Just the absence of something. So it itself has no existence. But that means that the knowledge has to, in a sense, replace, come and fill the hole of the non-existent ajnanam. Right? Because if ajnanam doesn't exist, really, it's just the absence of something. It itself doesn't have any existence. It has no being. It's just the absence of something, right? Now, the problem is this. If ajnanam, if ignorance is only the absence of something, it itself can't have any effect. It can't do anything because it's not there. So it doesn't have any what we call bhava. It doesn't have any being. Even if the being is mitya, still it has to have some being, we say. Because ajnanam is responsible for a lot of trouble, ajnana creates a lot of problems. So, for instance, the rope snake drishtanta illustration comes in here. If we look at ajnanam of the rope, right, as something that has a positive being of its own, then that ajnanam can be responsible for the projection of a snake. In other words, the ajnanam allows something to happen. It allows the rope to be misperceived as a snake. It allows me to take myself, right, to be a limited being, and then to actually suffer the results of that limitation. And so here, when it says jnanena tu tad ajnanam, this ajnanam is something that is nashitam, it is something which is destroyed. Nashitam means it is actually destroyed by ajnanam. That means that there's something there to be destroyed. Because ajnanam for in Advaita, ajnanam, ignorance, is looked at as having twofold capacity, as something which has a twofold capacity. The twofold capacity is it covers something that is there. It covers. It's called avaranam. So it allows for a covering of something that is there. But it also, for what is covered, it allows a projection upon that. That's called vikshepa. So ignorance itself is seen to be positive, having this twofold capacity. However, this ignorance, which is viewed as beginningless, right? And there are big discussions over this. Ignorance is viewed as beginningless because what would its prior condition be? Right? If its prior condition would be what? It would have to be knowledge, right? So ignorance is viewed as beginningless, but it's also viewed as something which has an end. And the end of ignorance is knowledge. So this is significant in terms of trying to understand how knowledge can bring about, in a sense, liberation. Right? We say knowledge, jnanam, is moksha. The knowledge itself is moksha, liberation. Because knowledge removes ignorance, destroys ignorance. And moksha is an already given fact. Knowledge isn't going to create moksha. It's going to remove the ignorance that causes you to feel bound or to believe erroneously, take yourself to be bound. In fact, the Atma the self, your being, has never at any time been bound. Your Atma is Brahman. It doesn't become Brahman. Your Atma is Brahman, which is limitless. It doesn't become limitless. It is limitless. But if it is limitless already, it's already free, right? Then what is causing you to take yourself to be bound? Right? We say that is ajnana. We can't say that some sort of an action is making you think that you're bound. Right? Because an action won't remove it. If you're already free, you're already free. There's no amount of action or anything that can cause you to take yourself to be bound. What makes you take yourself to be bound is ajnana, is ignorance. Mm. And so what is going to remove ignorance? Knowledge. No amount of action is going to remove ignorance. Right? They're compatible. You can have knowledge and do action. You can be ignorant and do action. It doesn't make any difference. For now, for us, as jivas, we've been doing lots of actions. All kinds of actions, including spiritual actions. You know, including meditation, meditation and yoga and all things that are very good for you. There's no question about that. Contemplation is good for you. Meditation is good for you. Yoga is good for you. Swamiji will go on and on and on. Eating brown rice is good for you. Sprouts are good for you. You know, standing on your head is good for you. Lots of things are good for you. You can have a thriving, multidimensional practice of things that are good for you. But those things don't negate or touch your ajnanam. So ignorantly you can do yoga. Ignorantly you can meditate. Right? Ignorantly you can be macrobiotic. Ignorantly you can do anything that you can think of. That doesn't touch your those actions don't touch your ignorance. They just give you a healthy body, and they can also give you antikarana shuddhi, the purity of mind, practicing dharma, practicing values. But ignorant, you can be an ignorant saint. You can be an ignorant yogi who has samadhi experiences. The problem is, see, this is things that gets very confusing to people. I can have a pure body, a pure agile body. I can sit in a lotus position for hours on end. I can practice meditative pranayama and meditative techniques. I can have nirvikalpa samadhi. Nirvikalpa samadhi, where I'm just abiding as pure being. And then I can come back from that state of experience, which I can label as such, come back from that given state of experience and say, I just experienced myself as limitless awareness. Using some words that I can use to describe that. And then I can say something like, how can I get that experience again? The problem is that the ahankara, right? The ahankara is, the ahankara means the I notion. The I notion is the ego. The I notion is identified with the mind. Right? And it is the mind that is having this non-dual experience. So I, who am this mind, am having this non-dual experience of pure consciousness. And then I, as the mind, say, this is who I really am. How can I have that experience? Or this is the truth. This is the supreme reality. This is the absolute truth. Even if a person takes acid or mescaline or some of these type of drugs that people take, where they have various non-dual experiences of different sorts, or all-inclusive experiences where you recognize, I am the infinite whole. I am the whole. That is the truth. I know that is the truth. But when I come back from that experience, the ego is still one identified with the mind, with a subtle body. And then that ego says, now, how can I again have this non-dual experience or this experience of oneness? How can I become that? Now I've lost it. And how can I become it? Now I've lost it. It's because the ahankara, the I, is identified with something which is limited and something which is changeless. That is the identification that has to go. the ego, the ahankara, has to go from the identification with the upadi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, to the identification with the atman, with the self. That is always present, that is always changeless, that is always self-evident, no matter what the changing experiences are. So it's actually, what has to happen is that the ahankara, which has it, the I notion that has its basis in ignorance, right, has to be released, you know, from that those erroneous conclusions, so that the I notion itself now is situated in the self that I am, in the truth of myself. When the I notion is settled in the truth of myself, then that self, which is constant and changeless, I recognize as the very, with teaching, I recognize more and more as the very being in which this whole creation rests, as the very self of this whole creation. And that becomes aparoksha. That becomes my direct, immediate recognition. But that direct, immediate recognition takes place because I've de-affected, in terms of my knowledge, myself from its total identification with this body, mind, sense organs. This is a whole seer-seeing, teaching methodology where I release the conscious being, the me, from these things that are actually illumined and actually part of the creation. Just as I see you right now through my eyes, all of you are obviously part of the creation. You're all existing here in this room. So I can say you're all obvious to me. It's obvious that you're part of one whole network. You're one part of Ishwara. You're part of this scene. Right? You're part of the scene. And I can extend the scene to encompass the entire creation. You're all part and parcel of the scene of this creation, of a greater story. You know? And I can say that with such confidence. But I tend to forget that this body is as seen as your body. My body is as much part of this scene, the scene of the creation, as you are, obviously. And then I tend to forget that my sense organs that see all of you are also seen, right? I see my sense organs through my mind. I know if my sense organs are working or not working. I'm aware of my sense organs. They're also part of the scene. Right? My body is part of the scene. My sense organs are part of the scene of the creation. My thoughts are part of the scene of the creation. Right? I'm aware of my thoughts. Right? The thoughts come and go. I'm aware of my emotions. They're part of the scene of the creation. I'm aware of the I thought. I am doing this, I am doing that. That's all. These are all things that exist within the fabric of this creation. Just like if you were having a dream and you're identified with a dream character in the dream. The body is part of the dream. The body's sense organs are part of the dream. The body's mind, you know, and emotions are part of the dream. Even the I thought, I am doing this, I'm all part of the dream. Part of the dream fabric. It's so easy, like if we can see that so clearly when we're talking about the dream. That's why Vedanta always uses that illustration of the dream. We can see it so clearly. I can see all of this when I'm looking at you. Yeah, you're part of the creation. Your sense organs are part of the creation. Your mind is part of the creation. It's all part of the fabric. But this body, mind, sense organs all is also is part of the creation, all objectified. But who is the Atma? Who am I? Because I am not the objectified. Right? I am not what is being objectified. I am the conscious being because of whom all of this can be objectified. So I'm not the objectified. I'm the conscious being because of whom things are objectified. Right? I'm the conscious existent being, not objectifiable. If I'm objectifiable, then the consciousness that's objectifying, that allows these things to be known, is somebody else. Right? There's somebody because of which all of this is known. And so, this self that I am is already me. It is already completely existent, completely experienced as I am. When I say I am, I exist. when my mind is saying, I exist, I'm a conscious being, all of those words are just simply labeling me very truthfully. They are labeling the reality. I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being. But then they make the mistake. This is the moha. This is the ajnanam. This is the delusion. I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being in the form of this body and mind and sense organs. That's the moha. Moha means delusion. That delusion is brought about, or that mutual superimposition, that is brought about by ignorance. And it is that ignorance that needs to be removed. So nothing here, knowledge doesn't create anything. It removes ignorance. And in the removal of the ignorance is the removal of the illusion, the removal of the problem. The ignorance creates a tremendous amount of pain because it makes me relate to the creation and to myself in a way that I am not. Right? That false way of that relating to myself in a way that I'm not, I'm only going to lose. Right? Because the infinite is made limited. What is infinite and whole, which is what we all seek, all of these things like union, like if we say union with God, or wholeness, or the feeling of being complete, the feeling of being loved, the feeling of being not isolated, all of these type of things that human beings seek are in fact our own nature. And so when that nature isn't recognized, if the mind doesn't have that home base, which is its fulfillment, right? That's a good way to say it. If the mind hasn't recognized its home base, which is its fulfillment, then it is seeking that fulfillment. Right? If I haven't, another way of saying it, if the mind hasn't recognized itself, the truth of itself, the self, if it hasn't recognized that, then it will seek it. And that's our problem. What is it that we're seeking? Well, we're seeking to exist for a day longer. That's one thing, you know. Let me live for a moment longer. Let me live for a day longer. You know? Let me go on being. Right? Let me go on being. That's one thing, you know. Let me know more. You know. Let me gather more and more knowledge. Let me know. Let me complete myself. Let me understand. Let me know more. And with the last one, ananda. Let me be full. Let me be full, complete, ananda, love, fullness. All of these things a human being naturally seeks. And what is the nature of the Atma? Sat. Existence. Existence which doesn't come and go, being which doesn't come and go, sat. Chit, consciousness, the big knownness. Atma is the knownness itself. So sat, chit. Everybody's heard of sat, chit, ananda. Wholeness, fullness, you know. And so, what does it mean for somebody who is ignorant? Whenever I feel a moment of fullness, if my mind is relaxed and not causing me any problems, I'm at home, all is well with me. Because my mind is relaxed for the moment and it's not competing with my own nature, you know. My sense of being, existence, right? That beingness itself is not apart from me. Beingness. The problem is, I don't know that this beingness is not subject to death. It's what I would like, but I don't know it. I haven't recognized beingness, my being, in its own right, in its as what it is. I recognize it only in identification with the body. My beingness is one with the body. The body is finite and is changing. It's subject to death. What does that mean? My being is subject to death. Right? If I am the body and the body is subject to death, my being, who I am, is subject to death. It's very simple. If I'm not the body, then the death of the body is not my death. If I am the body, the death of the body is my death. My being is very identified with the mind. Usually we look at this in terms of the mind, in terms of ananda. You know, when my mind is happy, I am happy. When my mind is agitated, I am agitated. If my mind is loving, I am loving. If my mind is hateful, I am hateful. If my mind is smart, I am smart. My intellect is smart, I am smart. If my intellect is dull, I am dull. There's an absolute identification there. That identification, you know, I need to remove the ignorance that causes that identification, which is false. Because even the emotional life comes and goes. It's known by you. I was happy, now I'm sad. I was sad, now I'm happy. How do you know you're sad? I know I'm sad. When I'm sad, believe me, I know it. Right? When I'm hurt or agitated, I definitely know it. Well, what about when it goes? I know when it goes also. And when I'm finally, you know, restful and peaceful, I know that. Whatever the condition is, I know. These conditions come and go and come and go and come and go. And I say, well, I was happy and now I'm sad and now I'm agitated and now I'm peaceful and now I'm this and now I'm that. But this I remains the same. The one, the me that was sad is the me that is happy, right? The me that is agitated. The me is the same. It's not somebody else. The same me that was sad is the same me that is happy is the same me that is agitated. This is the me that I have to know. The me that's abiding, right? The self that is abiding, that's not coming and going. Because when my mind discovers that self, it has a home base. It has a self then. Until the mind discovers, recognizes, there's a me, a self that's not coming and going, that's not changing, that's not subject to fluctuation. It is always the same. Then you have a self. Until then, the self is on a wild ride. The mind doesn't have a self, it is the self. That's how it takes itself to be the self. It doesn't have a self, it takes itself to be the self. This is hell. It's hell. Because you can't count on the mind to always be pleasant or happy or full or complete. Sometimes it's unhappy. Sometimes it's hurt. Sometimes it's agitated. Sometimes it's depressed. Sometimes it's sad. Sometimes it's joyful. But who knows when? And you know what they say? If this is samsara, when you have an up moment, here's your up moment. You're so happy, but unfortunately you know for certain when you're at that peak of happiness that you will be coming down. And that means that as you're up here so happy, there's a sadness that comes. Because you know, this isn't going to last. You're certain of it, you know. And it doesn't. And boom, okay. So it comes down. That's sad. But when you're even up there being happy, you know that this isn't going to last. It's only going to be for a while, and you grieve over that. And then, of course, you do come down. But darn it, when you're down in this pit of depression or hurt, I'm never going to come up. This is it. Then you feel this is nitya, you know. This is the eternal state. whether I'll ever get out of it, I don't know. Maybe this is, you know, this is going to be it now. I'm down in this hell now. This is going to be it.
This is the end.
So when we're down, you know, we don't know if we're going to come up. But if we're up, we definitely know we're going to come down. Isn't that odd? Mm-hmm. That's how it is. That's what we could, it's samsara, you know, samsara. But this mind doesn't have a self. You see that? That mind doesn't have a self. It is the self. And so whatever condition happens to be there, that is me for the moment. That's who I am. And then it becomes very incumbent upon you to work with your situations to make sure that it won't cause you to be on the downside, you know, the sorrowful side of samsara. Because what makes your mind happy or sad is getting your way in the world in one way or another. Fulfilling your desires, getting things to be how you want them, will make you happy. When the things don't go the way you want them, will make you sad. And so I have to continually work in the world and manipulate the world in order to try to handle my mind, to keep my mind stable, in a stable, peaceful, happy condition. And that's a difficult thing to do, because I am not Ishvara. From the standpoint of this jiva, I'm not all-powerful, right? To manipulate the creation to make it be how I want. Or is it, you know, no problem. If we were in Swargaloka, in the heaven world, you know, heaven, then as you want it, so it is. And as your mind changes, well, I don't want it quite like that, it's not quite right. I want it like this, then so it is. And then so it is, and so it is. So your mind never has a chance to become annoyed. The creation is always modifying itself to meet your needs. And so the creation itself keeps your mind in a stable, happy condition. As soon as it starts getting a little cranky or something, creation changes to, this is Swarga, that's heaven. Right? This world isn't like that. Right? This is the Bhuloka. This is the loka where you have free will, where, the, as they were saying last week, 50-50. It's 50-50, 50-50 punya and papa. And you can't change that. You don't have the control to change that. And so your mind is not going to be catered to and kept in a stable position. And so this mind that is totally identified with the self means that yourself, from the standpoint of that mind that's suffering this identification, is on a wild ride. And a wild ride that you can't control. Sometimes happy, sometimes sad. And anything can throw you off the track. Even somebody raising their eyebrow incorrectly at the wrong time could throw you off into sorrow. So, when a person, it's very fragile. Ajnanam creates a very, very fragile condition. So what has to happen there is that in the removal of that ajnanam, what do we recognize? What does the mind recognize? It differentiates a self that is stable. There's a self that is stable who is ultimately, you know, the conscious being like the sun that illumines every experience that you have. It's a totally different inner environment for somebody who has knowledge as opposed to somebody who doesn't. Because somebody who has knowledge has a self. It's a very simple, has a self that in fact, by its very svarupa, by its very nature, is the self that I have been seeking. I recognize myself to be the self that I had been seeking. I am being that doesn't have an end. Being that is not subject to time. Right? I am consciousness, the very knowledge, very knownness that illumines every thought modification I have. I am the knowledge of every thought. I am the very knowledge that I seek, in fact. Consciousness is the very knownness that I seek. And I am the ananda, and the very ananda, the fullness, the wholeness that I seek. And so the search of the mind, once one gains this knowledge, the search of the mind is over because I recognize myself as being the one that I've been trying to find all these years, that I've been trying to experience. I'd say like this, trying to find, we wouldn't talk like that, but that's, even though that's the fact, we're trying to experience, we're trying to create our mind, make our mind be in such a way that we experience the self in the mind, rather than always experiencing the self as the self, which is illumining the mind, which is doing whatever it's doing. So when this knowledge takes place, the mind relaxes because it has now found what it was seeking, right? So that's why they say this, the ajnanam that has caused this problem is something that is destroyed. It's totally destroyed by the knowledge of myself as Brahman. Because I discover the self that I've been seeking out here to be the self that is always present, changelessly present. So that's what he's talking about there. Then he says, how this knowledge takes place. He says, first he says in the first line, for whom this ajnanam has been removed, this ignorance of the self has been removed by knowledge, for those people, itesham, for them, that knowledge illumines tatparam, illumines that self which is infinite, which is Brahman. Illumines that self like the rising of the sun, Adityavat. So that's an important, that can be confusing, so you have to understand what that means. This metaphor. When the sun rises, there's two things that are happening at that time, which is how this drishtanta is used. When the sun rises, as it rises, the darkness is removed. Right? The ajnanam is removed. So as the sun, as one starts gaining knowledge, the ignorance is being removed. Right? When the sun rises, that becomes lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter, the ignorance is being removed. And as the ignorance is being removed, what is actually there that the ignorance has been covering, the darkness had been covering, is exposed. See that? So beautiful. When the sun rises, as the darkness is removed, as the sun rises, what is there shines. Prakashyati, it means that the sun allows for what is actually there to shine. And so here, like that, when the knowledge takes place in the form of a vritti, like thought modification, the knowledge is removing the ignorance that has caused all of this kind of the darkness in terms of the way that I'm taking the world. As the knowledge, as the darkness is removed, what is revealed is what is actually here. Right? So the self, for instance, as the darkness is removed, yourself that is actually here and always has been here is recognized. Right? This creation as Ishwara, that has always been Ishwara, has always been here in that way, is now recognized. The little technical, the Satyam Mitya, that my being is the very self of all of these names and forms, and the names and the dependency of the names and forms onto myself, like the dependency, just to make it clear, when I say Satyam Mitya, if I use the illustration, the clay pot, the clay is Satyam, it is what is really there. The pot is Mitya, it depends, it's the form, the pot form is Mitya, it depends on the clay. Right? It's not really, there's not really anything there. Right? It's useful, the pot is useful, but there's only one thing there, and that's the clay. You wouldn't say that there's the clay and the pot. There's the clay. And the pot has the clay for its reality. The pot is there, it is useful, but its truth is the clay. So that is, like if I were to hold up a clay pot to you, you see both. You see the pot, and you see the clay, which is its truth. Right? Both are known. Both are absolutely clearly seen by you. Now, here I'm holding up the clay pot, and I say, Nadam, do you see the clay? Yes. Do you see the pot? Yes. Would you say yes if I were to tell you that the only thing that's really here is clay? Do you see that the only thing that's really here is clay in the clay pot? Yes. Why? Because, what if you say, no, I'm not sure. Well, what would happen if I see the clay pot? What would happen if I remove the clay? If there's clay and pot, what would happen if I remove the clay?
The pot would remain.
The pot would remain? Okay, here, I remove the clay.
Where's the pot?
Does everybody see? Okay. That's the Satyam Mitya. The point I want to make here with understanding that, though, is when knowledge rises, when that darkness goes away, when I'm looking at this creation, like, do I see the creation? Yeah. Do I see all of the names and forms? Absolutely. Do I see all of the color? Do I see all the order? Do I see everything that we're seeing right now? Absolutely. Do I see it as Mitya? Absolutely. Do I see it as Mitya means, if I say I see it as Mitya, that it's dependent on something else, that it has a substance, which is its truth, there can be no Mitya, right, without a Satyam. In other words, Mitya means that whatever that is totally dependent on something else for its being. Like the waves are dependent on the water. The waves are Mitya, The water is satyam. The waves have a form and a shape, but they have no being. The being is the water. The mitya is dependent on the satyam. The satyam is not dependent on the mitya. Imagine a wavy ocean. The waves are all mitya. They're totally dependent upon the water. Okay? The water, on the other hand, is not at all dependent on the waves. So it becomes a nice, placid ocean. The water has no... would care less about the waves or the nama-rupa, the name and form. It has no... It is not the name and form. If I take a clay pot, here I've got a ball of clay that's in the form of a pot. I could squash it and make it into a plate. It's totally irrelevant to the clay. But not to the pot. The pot can't be without the clay. The clay can be without the pot. Right? The water can be without the waves. The waves can't be without the water. That's satyam mitya. So this creation, right, can't be without me. What if I think about it? This creation that we're experiencing, let's remove the set. Let's remove existence. No, we can't do that. Let's remove its knownness. It is. Whole infinite creation has being. That's a common denominator. Right? The entire infinite creation, it has being. It is. It exists. It is. Just take that for granted. But it's a one, it's non-dual, in fact. This being, beingness, the isness that everything enjoys is non-dual. All of these colors is, right? All of these forms is. All of them have being. You could say, you know, red being, blue being, brown being, white being. But the being is the same. The isness is the same. Right? That's the clay. Everything experienced in the creation shines. It is known. Right? It is known. Red is known, black is known, blue is known. Right? Painting is known, wall is known, computer is known, table is known, body is known, clothes are known, eyes are known, mind is known, thoughts are known, emotions are known, I thought is known. The known is the same. The object is different. Right? So you could have a big pot and a small pot. The sat, the chit, the ananda. Now this is something which needs to be differentiated. But let me say something about the ananda, just in terms of fullness, in terms of our experience, and not just the swarup ananda. Anything in the world can be a source of ananda to somebody. I think that's the funniest thing. Anything in the world can be a source of ananda to somebody. And it can also be, at the same time, a source of pain to somebody else. And at the same time, can be neither a source of ananda or a source of pain to it all. Which is, for most people, I mean for every person, 99.99999 to the nth degree percent of things in this creation have no effect on you whatsoever. There's an infinite number of things in this creation that you could care less about. You see them or you don't see them, it has no impact on you. You just walk by neutrally. And then there's a few things that you love and a few things that you don't love. A few things you like, few things that you don't like, right? And those can change. The things that you like can become things that you don't like. And the things that you don't like can become things that you like. And the things that you like can also become things that are neutral, that you could care. They go into the, you know, into St. Vincent de Paul's or to the, you know, you know, garage sale. Even people, it's like that. People go into the garage sale also. Yeah? So, and think then just think like this. Okay, in your little world, there's some things that you like, you know? And in this person's little world, there's some things that they like. In that person, they have some things that they like and some things that they like. Everything can light up for you. Anything can light up and anything can turn into its opposite also. Right? That's the mind's, all that is the mind's relaxing and tensing up, relaxing and tensing up. It's nothing more than that. If you think that an object can make you happy and you're able to fulfill that desire at that moment, your mind relaxes up and ananda reflects in the mind. Your mind tenses up because something is there that you don't want, and ananda is then not the, yourself isn't reflecting in the mind. In fact, the mind is kind of like a muddy water bucket, you know, shining in the sun. That ananda is as though not reflecting in the mind. So that's how when we think of ananda, even bliss, or the happiness, we really only are thinking of it in terms of the vritti, the thought modification, how my mind is feeling. Because remember, I only think of myself as my mind. So if my mind is in a condition that's enjoying having some joy, I think, this is great, I am happy now. Then my mind's in another condition of sadness, I'm sad. So I'm only thinking of experiences of happiness and unhappiness in terms really of the relaxed condition of my mind. I have not recognized, if I don't have knowledge, I haven't recognized the abiding ananda of my own swarupa, of my own self. That abiding ananda isn't coming and going. That abiding ananda is there even if the mind is depressed. The mind is happy, if the mind is depressed, if the mind is sorrowful, if the mind is agitated. The one illumining that has its own nature, which is an abiding wholeness and fullness. And so that's the Satchit Ananda. And when that ananda has been recognized, you recognize that I could go like this. Being. Everything is because I am. Satyam Mitya. Everything is because I am. Everything is known because I am knowledge. I am consciousness. Everything is because I am Sat. Everything is known because I am consciousness. Everything is fullness is ananda because I am ananda. I say everything is ananda, it's because I have recognized that the very swarupa, the very nature of being itself, is ananda. Right? The very nature of being. Now look, when I say it is, right? I'm not usually saying it is ananda, 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 ananda. Right? I'm not saying that. Because I equate the word ananda or bliss with a vritti in the mind, which is a shanta vritti. It's a peaceful vritti. That vritti gets labeled as ananda, and a sorrowful vritti gets labeled as dukkha. Right? So I have sukha and dukkha, sukha, dukkha, sukha, dukkha, based upon these emotional states of the mind. Right? They're emotional states of the mind. Some are sukha, some are dukkha. Some are happy, some are sad. And so I'm not, if that's how I'm defining ananda, I'm not like I can say it is. I can't say it is ananda. Right? I can't say that. If I've defined ananda as a mental state that comes and goes. And obviously not everything's ananda. But what if I have recognized that ananda as the very nature of existence? That's the ananda that illumines sukha and dukkha. The ananda, the fullness, that is the fullness present to the sukha, the happiness in the mind, and the ananda that is present to the dukkha in the mind. An ananda that doesn't come and go. That's the swarupa ananda. That's the ananda of the atma. That once that ananda is discovered, that ananda, which is here, unhidden, uncovered, absolutely fully experienced as your own Swarupa right now at this moment, that Ananda, I have to ferret out, recognize, and say, oh my gosh, I've been here all along and I hadn't recognized myself. I haven't recognized how important I am to myself. How important my own being, this me, is to me. That in fact there is nothing more important than my being. There is nothing more beloved than my own self, than my own being. You know, it is me because of whom I do everything. There is nothing more. And then if you sit with that, you know, like in meditation, when we do meditation, it's really to ferret out and then come into relationship with my own presence, the wholeness of my own presence, that in fact you would never want to change. In fact, everything you do is really just in honor of that. And that's that is the meaning of the word Ananda. This word has been translated as bliss, and so we always think of some ecstatic mental state rather than the very simple wholeness of my own self, you know. And so sometimes when we do a guided meditation, we'll say, you know, just as you relax and just become aware of your own presence, just to recognize what I am like, just the presence of the conscious being that I am. Is this presence, this me, my own presence, is it dear to me? Is my own presence dear to me? Would I want it to be different? You might want your body to be different. You might want your intelligence to be different. You might want your emotional state to be different. But the one who's having this body, one who has the emotional state, one who has the mind, that me is, I don't want to be different. I may want to give it prettier dresses. But I want me to be the one to have those prettier dresses. I want this me that I am to have the better mind, me to have the prettier body, me to have the happier mind, all these type of things. I want me to have those. But this me is beloved. So this me has to be recognized. And when the mind recognizes it, then all of a sudden, this mind, this body, and in fact, this universe has a self. I have a self. You know, this mind has a self. Body has a self. I recognize myself, who I am, is stable. It is stable and whole and complete. Makes for an entirely different way of being. And it is this Swarupa, the very nature of myself, that becomes, as the sun rises, right? As the sun rises, myself becomes recognized. It's not that it wasn't. When the sun rises, what is already there becomes seen. That's why that example is so beautiful. The ignorance, the darkness is removed, and what is already always there, you know, in its entirety, just becomes seen. I become awake to it. So it's a beautiful example for what liberation is. You just what you always have, then what you are, becomes recognized. The mind is then out of the darkness. Before that takes place, the mind is dark. It's in darkness. It's dark. You know, the darkness is as though covering the reality of yourself. And that covering causes a lot of problems. Right? And the ignorance removes that. In removing that, the problems are removed. That's the thing. The removal of ignorance is the removal of the problems that the ignorance had caused. That's why we look at ignorance as something positive. You know? That's why we look at ignorance as something positive, because it causes so many problems. And also, secondarily, when the ignorance is removed by knowledge, it doesn't come back. This is important, because otherwise, if ignorance is just the absence of knowledge, then you have to keep that knowledge active, because if the knowledge isn't active, the ignorance will come back. Right? So you have to keep thinking about it, thinking about it, thinking about it, thinking about it, because if you're not thinking about it, then the ignorance is there. Right? So it's a subtle point, but it's actually very, very important. If the ignorance is removed by knowledge, then it doesn't come back. Like, for instance, once you're walking along and you mistake the rope as a snake. Once you see the rope, you know, you see the rope, the snake goes. Right? You can't get the snake back. And you try to look this way or that way. You can't do it, you know. Once you see definitively that this is a rope, there you go up and you analyze it, and you see it clearly, you walk away, you come back, you have to do whatever testing you need to do, depends on how traumatized you were, right? But say you give it its due and you see clearly this is a rope. Now, even though you can talk a lot about how you had mistaken it as a snake, you know, you can't get the experience back. And you can't regain snakeness on the rope and the emotions. Also remember, when you saw the snake, you saw a snake and that snake was the reality and you responded to that reality. With fear, whatever. I mean, Swamiji will have you dying on the ground. You know, being bitten by the snake and you only have this few minutes to live and it's all completely over with. You know? There's no end to the emotional reality, and the emotional reality will be as great as your reaction to that snake object. Now, when you see the rope, you're convinced, right? Not only is the snake gone, but the emotional reality that was generated by the snake is also gone, because there's no snake. The cause for the emotional reality is not there any longer. This is what happens here. The only difference is that. Because the snake is a subjective experience. You could have, walking along with me, you could have seen the rope. I saw the snake, right? This creation is not your subjective experience. This body, mind, sense organs is part of this objective experience. It's part of Ishvara. And so when you see, when you gain knowledge, it's not like the snake totally disappears. As long as you have this body, mind, sense organs in this creation, you will continue to experience the creation, but as a clay pot, you experience both the pot and the clay. Here you experience the satyam and mitya. Right? The pot is the mitya, the satyam is the clay. Here, this creation is the mitya, the satyam is the satchit ananda, which is my own being. That is as aparoksha, as recognizable as the clay. It's just that the difference here is that if I hold up a clay pot, both the clay and the pot are seen through your eyes. Right? In this case, the nama rupas, the names and forms of this creation, are seen through my sense perception. The atma is seen aparoksha as my very being. It is self-luminous, self-evident. That's why we say the atma doesn't require a mind or sense organs to illuminate. It's self-luminous as a very conscious being, which is the very truth of this creation. But that conscious being is pervasive to the mitya. And so the satyam is pervasive as your own being. The mitya is what you experience through your sense organs. And so right now, at this moment, you can see satyam mitya, my being. When that dehatma buddhi is there, is not there. Dehatma buddhi means that notion of the deha, the body being the self. When that is broken, there's nothing containing, there's nothing in the creation that is away from the satyam, from the satchit of myself. So that knowledge becomes absolutely clear. And with that, that's what I see, that's what I recognize. And now the emotional reality that's being generated in me as a person is the emotional reality that is appropriate to this reality of satyam mitya. Right? That's my emotional reality matches the reality. Just like my emotional, In ignorance, my emotional reality matches the snake, not the rope. Right? Now my emotional reality of an ajnani matches the ignorance-born reality that I experience. But if once I have knowledge, then my emotional reality matches my knowledge, which is true just in samsara. It's just true in daily life. Your emotional reality is a response to how you hold reality, to your ignorance actually, and even relatively to your knowledge. But look at your emotional reality, even in just in samsara, within duality. Your emotional reality is generated by the way that you perceive your world. Here it is the same, this, except on a deeper level. Your emotional reality, which was being generated by ignorance, is not generated anymore. Right? What is generating your emotional reality is now your knowledge. And so your mind enjoys shanti. It enjoys peace. Because what you had been seeking outside of yourself, which was never attainable, and so it's like beating your head against the wall, has now been attained by the mind. So the mind feels complete and satisfied. It's all as well with me. That's what these next verses are going to say. So why don't we stop there? Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harih Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harih Om.